Namaste. 24th April is a very special day. So I thought we'll take a little detour. Instead of reading our usual wonderful prayers which prepare us to receive the Mother and Sri Aurobindo so beautifully, we'll read something else, a very powerful passage. As we know, this is the day the Mother had arrived from Japan. And before coming, she had realized that there was a way she was working to convert the Lord of Falsehood, who is at the root of all chaos that takes place in creation. And she had realized that it won't be possible this way. She had descended into the red heat of furnace of hell, Calvary, as she says, which is the crucifixion of Christ, that place. And yet, all the love that she poured, creation is not ready to receive it. Man is not ready to receive it. In fact, that prayer we can read. Man is not ready to receive it. And therefore, she has to return back to India. This prayer is prayer of September 3rd, 1919. Where she says, "Since the man refused the meal I had prepared with so much love and care, I invoked the God to take it." This meal is divine life, divine love, divine peace, divine joy, divine grace. All this she brings for man. But man is not ready for it. He wants the old accustomed ways. He wants the old consciousness, the old way of life, which is a way of division, which is a way of egoism, which is a way of ignorance, which is a way of endless expansion of desires, which is a way of wanton ambition, which is a way of fear and terror and lust and greed. So he refuses the meal. What is behind it? Yes, these are the forces of falsehood. So she invoked the God. "My God, thou hast accepted my invitation." And the Lord comes. He sanctions. Not just the Lord, the Supreme God. He comes and he accepts the invitation. In the sense, he says, "It is wonderful what you have prepared. So what if man has refused it? I accept it. I sanction it. I know this is what is required. Thou hast come to sit at my table, and in exchange for my poor and humble offering, thou hast granted to me the last liberation." Now her heart is at rest. And then she says, "I have mounted the Calvary of successive disillusionments high enough to attain to the resurrection." So resurrection is literally, she is now newborn, but in a different way. The first time she sees she is newborn, when she is in front of Sri Aurobindo, she leaves that entire constructions of the mind. But there are other aspects of the past which are still there. That's why she travels and there are other things to be gathered. But the constructions of the mind have completely gone away. She describes that, "I am like a little child, newborn, who doesn't know what this new life is." And now she leaves behind completely the past, burns all the bridges, and she's ready for this divine life. The God has accepted it. And therefore, she is ready for the resurrection. This is the true meaning of resurrection. It is to be born in the supramental life. And she says it means to have no past, no karma, no bondages, even while we are living. This is the state. "Nothing remains of the past but a potent love which gives me the pure heart of a child and the lightness and freedom of thought of a God." This nothing remaining of the past is very beautifully expressed in one of our small little passages just before she comes to India. She is probably asked, who is she? And she, by the British authorities, why she is going, where she is going, etc., etc., what is her purpose? And most likely in response to that, but this is something applicable to all of us. She writes, "Myself and my creed." So it's so interesting. what is this creed to which we belong? Because we belong to her. So whatever is her creed is our creed. By default, design, by grace. So what is her creed? What should be our state when we go to Mother and Shurbindo? Because this is, she has written in February 1920, just before she is to travel back to India. When she describes that she was sitting and she is wondering, she is telling to God that I had promised that I'll descend into hell. I am ready to bear all the sufferings. But I want to convert the Lord of falsehood. But I know it is impossible to do it this way. And then she has a vision. And she has the vision of the Supreme. She says, more beautiful than the vision of the Gita. And he's like a gigantic being. He comes before her, picks her up like the wisp of a straw, and turns towards the west, towards India. And on the other end, she finds Sri Aurobindo. So she knows now that this is how the work has to be done, by our coming together. This is the secret of their coming together. Without it, the work cannot be done. This is what we are going to read subsequently. But what is the state in which she is for preparing herself for this work? And then she describes that the whole thing vanished. From next day, they started returning. But before that happens, she writes this. I belong to no nation, no civilization, no society, no race, but to the divine. We want to be free of all this, but we cannot do it without the divine. This is the difference. If we try to do it purely on the basis of the egoistic individuality, we will not only not succeed, it will lead to perdition. So these things have to be transcendent, and transcended by belonging entirely to the divine. Like the three steps of Vishnu, where first step is on the family, Shurbindo describes. The second is the nation, and the third is the whole world. And here she says, for the transformation, it has to go even further. I belong to no nation, no civilization, no society, no race, but to the divine. Whatever we may need to write for practical purposes is different, but this should be our inner state. I obey no master, no ruler, no law, no social convention, but the divine. Here again, it does not mean that we enter into lawlessness. That is the individualistic idea of freedom, which is an egoistic idea. This is what happened when people came to Auroville and they said, we are free. So we can do whatever we feel like because there are no conventions, no rules. Then mother had to put some rules because people, this has to be understood in its highest sense. It is not a disrespect for rule of law of a land. You have to do it because it's, well, that's how it is. It's something practical, and it's not something bad. It is done with a good intention, though it is not always in conformity with truth. And it is not the ultimate way. Sri Aurobindo reveals in the human cycle that ultimately the true satyug will be when we don't need police, when we don't need law, when human beings are illumined from within to follow the inner guide, the age of intuition. Until then, you need the policeman and the law. And I may add, until then one needs doctors and priests, because in the new creation you won't need all these things. But law, police, external machinery are necessary, because we are still in ignorance. And the sign of a new age will be when we are freed from this, and each individual will realize from within that it is the Godhead, the one self in all, towards whom he has to turn and in whose unfolding he has to participate and collaborate. But until then, outwardly we may follow the law of the land, not necessarily social convention, but we have to know that we are doing it. Well, it's a world of ignorance, but deep inside we have to listen to the divine. And if the divine command is in contravention to anything else, then the divine command stands. That is the teaching of the Gita also. There can be nothing greater than the divine command. But we must be very, very sure that it is the divine commanding us and not the voice of the ego which is taking this form. So obviously it means a long training. It means complete equanimity, freedom from preference. Then only we begin to hear the divine command within. And at his command, we should be willing for anything. That's what all the great ones who have gone ahead, look at, you know, even those who have seemingly followed the law, have yet done it. Look at Christ. He could have very easily said, I'm sorry, forgive me for saying these things which I have said. I won't do it again, and he would have been spared the cross. But what does he choose? He chooses the cross and says, forgive them, for they know not what they are doing. So even while we follow these things, we should know they are temporary scaffoldings needed for man for the present state of gross ignorance. And when we are awakened to the divine reality, then these things automatically drop off. So she says, I obey no master, no ruler, no law, no social convention, but the divine. To him I have surrendered all, will, life, self. For him I am ready to give all my blood drop by drop. It's a beginning of Radha's prayer, that state of Radha. And this state we awaken into only when we have surrendered ourselves. Means not just inside to say, oh, I have surrendered myself to you. It means to be governed by the divine. It means to live one's life for the divine. It means to think of the divine. It means to be preoccupied by the divine. It means to have one single aim and mission in life. And it is to serve the divine, to love the divine, to know the divine. And as we read yesterday, to know him more and more so that we can serve him better and better. And she would, and this surrender should be, this giving of even blood drop by drop, if such be his will, should be with complete joy, and nothing in his service can be sacrificed for all his perfect delight. So we just read this again. Myself and my creed, I belong to no nation, no civilization, no society, no race, but to the divine. I obey no master, no ruler, no law, no social convention, but the divine. To him I have surrendered all, will, life, self. For him I am ready to give all my blood, drop by drop, if such is his will, with complete joy, and nothing in his service can be sacrificed for all his perfect delight. So this is the state we have to rise into step by step. And the path towards that is surrender. Then we really enter into the path in the true sense of the word. So that it's not just a belief, but a real living. And then in the end, we read something, a passage from the Supreme. This book is, of course, Conversations of the Mother with Monada. And it's so wonderful. Of course, as I said, it's wonderful that all this tomorrow, or rather on 24th, all this is going to be telecast, and people world over will be fortunate enough. They are feeling it like a grace that they will see live all, live the samadhi, possibly the mother's room. I don't know, maybe the parikrama of the ashram, because the gates will be closed and there won't be a darshan in the usual sense. But then we can look at it another way. At one level it's beautiful, because it means now world over the event within here is connected by with people all over the world. So it is a realization of one truth, that the ashram is no more limited to the four compounds, to the four walls of what we call as the ashram compound, or even to Pondicherry. Mother had revealed this in 1957 in one of her conversations. I think it is in June 1957. But now it is actually being realized at the most practical level. But more importantly, it is a time, if we can go beyond and really find that true home, and that true home is within, and through that door we can always awaken and live in the true home of Sri Aurobindo and the mother in the subtle physical. As when Sri Aurobindo was asked by someone that, I'm having this problem, this difficulty, I think if I go to mother's room and sit for some time, it will be all right. Sri Aurobindo says, but you don't need to go there. You can go into the inner room, which is always open. And not only you can go and visit there, you can choose to stay there permanently. So the mother's room is within us, and she is revealing to us, where is this room? She is giving us the address. And the beauty is, for this room, we don't have to travel anywhere. We don't have to even log in to a computer or a network. But we have to log in inside, within us, which he has always been saying, that I reside within your heart. Because we forgot it, she is giving us a chance to remember it. There, in that immense cave of the inner being, one must plunge to find the inner support. There is no shortcut. This has to be done. One must descend and descend further, more and more, plane after plane, consciousness after consciousness, leaving behind all imprints, and enter into the very depths to find the serene peace. Inner house, it is a house which is filled with the atmosphere of peace. If we can feel the peace within, and Champak Lal ji first time met Sri Aurobindo, he asked, what do you feel? He said, peace. He said, peace is the sign that you are in contact with the divine presence. Within this immense quietude of the being, far from the exterior noise, far from the anguish and the pain, far from the thoughts and the imaginations, far, far away from the waves of sensations, one must enter very carefully there where the ego does not exist to feel the presence. The two can't stay together. The ego and the new creation, the ego and the divine life, the ego and the divine presence. Prem gali ati sakari tame dona samahi. The lane of love is very narrow and two cannot be there together. Jab main tha tab hari nahi, jab hari tab main nahi. When the ego self was there, then there was no Lord. When the Lord was there, there is no ego. So this is where we have to enter, where ego vanishes, all imprints vanish, all the past strings that are attached to us, that draw us, pull us, all thoughts, sensation, imaginations, fears, suggestions, and we experience the deep inner quietude and peace of the Lord. And then she reveals something very beautiful about both. There is no duality anymore, no existence anymore, nothing at all. To be one with this spark of the immortal flame, the immanent divine, the unique and the one, the soul that resides in us. And she says it is the divinity within everybody's reach. It is the easier thing to do and the safer thing to do, without which to try transformation, to pull the force, to get into these self-aggrandizing ideas that I am doing yoga of the cells, that I understand too much. All this is just nothing but entering into a make-believe experiences. But to first find the psychic presence, the soul, that purifying flame. Then the rest, yes, will automatically follow. And then she says, in this soul, where the immanent divine resides, there and still deeper down in this purifying flame resides Sri Aurobindo. How beautiful, all the time with us. Immutable, Ananda, all-powerful, the invincible, the supreme Lord of our existence. Who is he? Not revolutionary, yogi, poet, philosopher, as long as we have all these things in mind. Gurur Brahma, Gurur Vishnu, Gurur Devo Maheshwara, Guru Sakshat Parabrahma, Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. And he's not just the Guru, he's the Lord of existence, he's Yog Yogeshwar, he is the friend of all creatures, he is the master, he is the mover of our destiny, he is the father, and everything else that we can imagine. The supreme Lord of our existence, the manifestation of the omnipresence in existence, the omnipotence in his effectuations, the omniscience of the supreme power manifested, because that power is there, but here in him it is manifested. One who is the goal, the master, the beloved, he is the beloved. This is the supreme, page 79 to 80. Who is also the supreme Lord. When one truly calls him, it is from there, mother points towards the heart, that Sri Aurobindo answers. It vibrates by his name. With his consciousness, there resounds the name of Sri Aurobindo, because his imprint is there. In the very depths, it is he who resides. All existence lives by him. It vibrates by him. The whole universe vibrates by him. He is there in everything, vibrant and animating by his presence. Who is Shurbindu? The all-pervading divine presence who has assumed this name and form as the avatar of the new age to manifest the omnipotence and omniscience of the divine. The delight of his name penetrates and purifies all. All that is required is to take his name, call him, rings and resounds everywhere in the sublime joy, eternal and true. With his name, the existence takes on a meaning. What about the mother? So the disciple asks, and she says that this is the meaning of gratitude, that the divine exists. But mother, Sri Aurobindo has always said that you are within us. Mother says, yes, it is true, perfectly right. Me, I am there as a presence in the eternal flame. The power that animates and initiates the action, the peace that renders all sweet and peaceful, the joy that overflows and sublimates, the light that purifies, and the vibration that sanctions. Sri Aurobindo is there as a sustaining entity, and me, I am there like a guide. In fact, it is the same identity in two. One who observes, the witness, and the other that effectuates, the Shakti. So long as one has not realized that, one cannot understand anything. So to truly understand, we have to know that the two are one. They have assumed two because of the necessity of the work. But they are one in consciousness, one in identity. Sri Aurobindo speaks of this in several places, and so does the mother. That mother even goes on to say, she says that if you see the difference, when you begin to see that Sri Aurobindo and myself are one, when to take Sri Aurobindo's name is to take my name, and to take my name is to call Sri Aurobindo. When you reach that state, when you see no difference between Sri Aurobindo's consciousness and mine, then you are ready to open to the supramental force. Not exact words, but this is the bhava. The exact words are in volume 13, Collected Works of the Mother. When you no longer make a difference between Sri Aurobindo and mother. Yes, my child, he who recognizes Sri Aurobindo and me. In fact, it is the same thing, the same identity. For him, all obstacles, all difficulties, all traps, all the so-called interruptions on the march towards the truth are swept away and removed forever. In this life, as well as after death, and in the lives to come, till eternity. Yes, for him, the Lord is all-powerful. Of course, he is always all-powerful. But as long as we live in a state of division, as long as we are not receptive, as long as we make a difference between Purusha and Prakriti, the Ishwara and the Shakti, which we have done for ages, we are not ready for the omnipotence of the Lord. So she says, he who sees the unity in him, the Lord is powerful. Only to repeat, Ma Sri Aurobindo, Ma Sri Aurobindo, Ma Sri Aurobindo, that is enough. Namaste.